This week's show is sponsored by Audible, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want with Audible.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out all the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. And the Rude One is back this week. How are you, Rude One?
I'm good. A little soggy on this rainy New York day.
I know. It is kind of ugly out there. It's cold, too.
It's finally fall.
I only like summer, so.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's just, I grew up in Louisiana, so summer to me just means, you know, living inside an incubator for 5 or 6 months of the year.
I don't know if anybody knows this, I probably talked about it a few times on the show. I actually lived in Florida for 12 years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Where?
In the Tampa St. Pete area.
So I think totally we talked about this.
Yes.
Because I lived in Largo and Clearwater.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Right. It's actually a really nice, I mean, I love New York City, I love all the stuff in it, I love the people, but if I could switch out the weather for Tampa's weather, I would do that in a heartbeat. But
No, I'm good.
You're good.
I like seasons.
Oh, bring the heat for me. But all right. So anyway, Louisiana and Florida weather aside, Lee and I will be talking about a number of issues this week, including momentum in the fight for LGBT equality, specifically on the gay marriage front. Then the GOP is pushing voter suppression laws for this election again, but the courts have dealt them a few new setbacks. And after that, an update on the Ebola crisis. And if we have time, Rolling Stone publishes an article calling President Obama one of the most successful presidents in history. And Rude One, I understand that you did a really nice blog post on that one. And
yes.
Would love to get to talk about that. So you can just hear Republican heads exploding all over the country with that. I just love that. I just love it. If you want to write to us to give us your feedback about anything we talk about on the show, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and we may read your email on the air next week. Yes, be afraid. Be very afraid.
Wow.
Yes. But again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. And our discussion of gay rights and same-sex marriage victories begins now. USA Today reported on October 6th, that the Supreme Court denied petitions to hear same-sex marriage cases in 5 states. The decision allows lower court rulings that legalize the practice to stay in place, which will make same-sex marriage legal in 11 states. We're getting there, Ruth.
Woohoo!
We're getting there. Virginia, Indiana, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, and Utah are immediately affected. 6 other states, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, Colorado, Kansas, and Wyoming, are overseen by the same appellate
courts. Dick Cheney can get gay married.
He can.
Yes.
Wow, you know what? The joke's just flowing.
I know.
So those 6 states must abide by their rulings. Now, I should point out, and I don't know what's going on with this guy sometimes, the rude one, but Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy blocked a federal appeals court ruling that voided same-sex marriage bans in Nevada and Idaho. He later backtracked and narrowed the stay to only the Idaho cases. So same-sex marriages can go forward in Nevada, but he blocked them, and apparently that Idaho case is going to go to the full Supreme Court. But other than that,
actually, this was just last night. The Supreme Court actually cleared the way.
Oh, really?
Yes, they put a stay on while they considered a longer stay, mm-hmm. and they denied the stay. So now marriages can go forward in Idaho.
But you know what? I feel for anybody who wants to do that in Idaho, because I remember when things like that were happening in other states, they were feeling like we could go ahead and get married, and then depending upon the decision, the marriage may not.
Well, but that goes for the entire nation, doesn't it? I mean, the Supreme Court could come in, could have ruled on any of these cases and said, yeah, you know what? Fuck you. You're not married anymore. We don't want you to be married.
No.
But that's the thing. That's the, you know, and that's why, yes, we have a reason to celebrate mm-hmm. this, the justices not ruling on these cases. But I get the feeling that they did it because one side or the other didn't think they could win. And I mean, the big prognosticators in the Supreme Court say it's probably because nobody was sure, you know, which way, you know, Anthony Kennedy would go. Mm-hmm. Anthony Kennedy being bisexual about so many things. And we never know which way he's going to swing. And so I think that it was that Roberts didn't want to be on the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
They didn't know which way Kennedy was going to go, the liberal justices. And so they just decided to hold off until a case reached them. I mean, these were cases where not doing nothing left it so that marriages could go forward. Eventually, a case is going to reach them, possibly Louisiana, speaking of my mm-hmm. home state, mm-hmm. possibly other places where states where there's been rulings that prevent same-sex marriage. When that's appealed to the Supreme Court, then they have to take a stand, because now they're saying, okay, let's have different rules for different states. If you live in Louisiana, or Texas, you as a same-sex couple are not as worthy of rights as a same-sex couple in New York or now Idaho.
Yeah, now I think, first of all, the cowardice that the Supreme Court has shown on this issue.
Yes, absolutely.
Unbelievable. But I think what's going to happen along those lines is it's going to get to the point where, for all intents and purposes, same-sex marriage is legal in 45, 46, 47 states. And finally then, and they're probably going to do it on the rule that basically says, and of course now, of course, when I want to think about it, it's
standing.
Not standing, but they're going to do it on basis of the fact that that something is legal in one state.
Right.
Has to be legal in all the rest.
Well, they have to recognize. I think that's the federal concern. If they were to come in and say, the federal concern is that marriages have to be recognized in all of the states. When they overturned the Defense of Marriage Act, that the federal government cannot discriminate and cannot say that benefits cannot go to same-sex couples. That yeah. the federal government has to recognize.
But it's a cowardly way out. If get to the point where it's 45, like I said, 45, 47 states that have basically have it legalized. So the Supreme Court is going to just try to do everything that they can not to really be the determining factor here, which is a shame, because the Supreme Court should be there to safeguard the rights of all of the citizens of this country. That's why they exist,
right.
in my opinion.
Yeah.
But you know what? At least you can say we're getting there. I think by the end of 2015, it's going
to
be over.
Well, we're up to, you know what? I actually agree with you. I do. I think at this point, the culture warriors have to know that this battle is lost. And they're desperate. You know, I've been to some of the sites where, you know, like the Family Research Council,
yeah.
who actually, you know, they didn't actually lose their fucking minds in the way that I thought they were going to. They came back with the most insidious, underhanded, bastardy way of dealing with this, saying that, you know, that we have 92 cases on marriage flooding the courts. So conservatives have a chance to push back and demand that Congress step in where the Supreme Court has not. And what I loved about, if you actually go to their site and read that quote, the word marriage is in quotation marks because, you know, they're not real marriage if it's the gays doing it.
Are they the one, Family Research Council, or is it another group that the Southern Poverty Law Center just recently called basically a hate group?
Oh, no, Family Research Council is listed as a hate group. Although there's several of them that are. Mm-hmm. And so
I love that, too.
Yeah.
Because it's so right.
But, you know, yes, you can say the tide of history is on the side of same-sex couples, but there's still got to be this nagging thing in the back of couples' minds that says, but what if? What if, you know, what if President Chris Christie gets to appoint a replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
You just helped me stay on my diet. But the one other aspect I wanted to talk about.
I just want to recognize that I did not make a Chris Christie joke when you said diet in relationship to Chris Christie. I want points for that somewhere that I did not make.
You did not do that, and you know what? I did not mean to make a diet reference.
No,
it's
understand.
My diet, not Chris Christie.
You know what? I'm all
diet.
About the fat shame.
I don't want it.
Okay. No. You can edit that part out.
No, I am not making fat jokes. I just want people to know I'm not making fat jokes.
I'm a big guy, and I you know what? That allows me to make fat jokes.
Boy, before I get into trouble, before we get into trouble, we should be one. No, you know, one of the fascinating aspects of this, and I don't like playing political games with the rights of people, but the fact is there is a big political aspect to this in terms of the Republican Party, because they are in a really bad spot here.
Oh, yeah.
The youth vote in this country, you know, the young people of this country, they are totally for LGBT equality in huge numbers. And Republicans obviously want to make some inroads with them. Can't do it if they're going to stay against gay marriage. And yet, that whole Christian right is still 20-25% of the Republican Party, and they will not vote for candidates on the Republican side if the Republican Party abandons this anti-gay rights plank. As a matter of fact, Mike Huckabee.
Ah!
I want to talk about him for a second, because former governor of Arkansas, now has his own show, declared this week that any Supreme Court decision is just an opinion until Congress passes enabling legislation. Not exactly right, former Governor Huckabee, but that's okay. But he also said, and this is interesting, he threatened to leave the Republican Party for being insufficiently anti-gay. He began a recent interview by threatening to leave the Republican Party if the GOP does not take a stand against the Supreme Court's decisions not to hear these appeals. And he said, "I'm utterly exasperated with Republicans and the so-called leadership of the Republicans who have abdicated on this issue, warning that they're going to lose every election in the future." I don't think he's necessarily wrong. I think, the entire way he's coming about it is really screwed up. But the Republican Party is in a bad spot here.
Yeah.
And it couldn't happen to a better bunch of people.
No, no. You know, in some ways, the Republican Party has sort of painted themselves into this corner.
Yeah.
And by basing, I mean, how many elections recently were based on anti-gay marriage legislation? Think about one of the reasons that we could say John Kerry lost in 2004 was because that magnificent asshole Karl Rove was able to get on the ballots in I can't remember how many states anti-gay marriage amendments. So, of course, all of, the assholes and yokels came out and voted for that and voted against Kerry. So now here we are just 10 years later, and now it is going to be toxic for any national candidate. And there's the problem. It's toxic for a national candidate, but it is not toxic for, your Louis Gohmerts. It's not toxic for all of the, the crazies. The crazies that are in the House of Representatives that will still run the House of Representatives, as well as the crazies in states like Idaho and Wyoming and Louisiana, who will be forced to take stands in order to get into the Senate. So, there's something that is going on that there's actually this great phrase called pinkwashing.
Yes.
And that the Republicans are trying to pinkwash themselves. They're trying, the national GOP is trying to say, okay, we're no longer going to be anti-gay. And we're not going to take the homophobic stance. I think Reince Priebus this week said that gay marriage is not really one of our most important issues. I can't remember the exact way he put it. So,
way to be insulting, Rents, by the way, by trying not to be insulting.
Right, exactly. But, so they're trying to pinkwash themselves in order to, to inoculate themselves against the charges that they're homophobic assholes that are going to, have Supreme Court justices and other judges and legislators who will try to strip away the rights for the LGBT community.
It's really fascinating in a way, because this is really one of several issues where the Republican Party is just trying to hold on with dear life to these regressive positions that is going to destroy them, and I keep telling them that. I keep telling them that on shows when I go on. I say it right to the faces of conservative pundits. You're going to destroy yourself with this. And they're like, you're a Democrat. You're not looking out for our best interests. And I said, quite honestly, it makes me feel bad to even say something that could help you. But I'm doing it knowing that you're not going to take my advice anyway. Right. So this, the immigration reform, what they're doing, continuing to do with women, and this is all going to destroy them.
But it can't happen fast enough. That's the problem, is that's not happening fast enough.
Yeah.
And because you've got people did you see Ted Cruz's statement that he put out?
No.
Oh, my God. You want to talk about heads exploding? His devious little mind just fucking blew out of his ears. This was his official statement released by his office. This wasn't some off-the-cuff thing he said. he said, let me see if I can do a Ted Cruz voice. It's a little harder.
We're from the South,
a little harder than a Lindsey Graham. It sounds like, and it's fake because he's from fucking Canada. And so, so he's putting this on. The Supreme Court's decision to let rulings by lower court judges stand that redefine marriage is both tragic and indefensible. By refusing to rule if the states can define marriage, the Supreme Court is abdicating its duty to uphold the Constitution. The fact that the Supreme Court justices, without providing any explanation whatsoever, have permitted lower courts to strike down so many state marriage laws is astonishing. This is judicial activism at its worst. I love that. It's judicial activism to not do anything.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating point of view there. Ted Cruz, I'm trying to think if there's anybody who I would want less in the White House.
Well, I mean, you know, Rand Paul's kind of a crazy conspiracy theory guy. I mean, Ted Cruz is just an opportunistic fuck. And I, you know, I think I've said
he's not a dumb guy.
Either. No, he's not. He's, you know.
So whatever dumb stuff that he puts out there is intentionally dumb.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, I know we're not supposed to talk about looks, but he's just so creepy looking. he looks like he's a crow who wants to sell you life insurance. Just that sinister little nose and...
There's so much creepy about him, you know? I mean, yeah. Supposedly, when he was in law school, the study groups...
Yes.
He refused to have anybody in his study group at... he was in one of the Ivy Leagues who didn't go to an Ivy...
He was
at
Princeton.
Princeton,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who didn't go to one of the top Ivy League undergrads. So they were in his law school. They were
In law school. I don't think it was at Princeton law school. It was at Princeton for undergrad. Yeah.
Okay. Might have been Harvard.
Yeah.
But even if you, though you were in his class in Harvard Law, wherever it was, if you didn't go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, or one of the top Ivies, you couldn't be in his study group. I mean,
man of the people.
Yes.
That's a man of the people right there.
So that's another way of showing you, when he puts out dumb, yokel-sounding stuff like this, it's totally an act. He's a total arrogant and...
I mean, have I told you my Ted Cruz story? It's not about me. It's about it's a story from a friend. When at Princeton, the freshmen have a camping trip where they go off, and it's supposed to be, you know, a bonding thing. Mm-hmm. And that when Cruz went, he was such a prick that, and it was only half serious, but people in his group discussed whether or not to ditch him in the woods.
Really?
This could be apocryphal, but I did hear it from somebody who claims they were part of this.
You can totally see that too, like
yeah.
that sort of fake filibuster that he had last year around this time. Just that, you know, you can try to hide how much of an arrogant SOB you are.
Yes.
But if you talk long enough, people are going to see it. And I think, you know, I think that really came out there. Now, we're sort of getting away from the main topic, and I want to go back to it because one of the things that I want to talk about a lot over the next year, I'm sort of going to pivot a little bit away from LGBT marriage when I talk about gay rights. Well, I still will talk about it.
Sure.
But what I really want to focus on is what I think is the next main battle for LGBT equality, and that is ENDA.
Yeah. Well, why don't you explain ENDA for the people?
I will explain it. So I spent some time on the Human Rights Campaign website today because I really wanted to define it well. And I guess let's talk about the problem that it's trying to address first. I think that makes sense. And what the Human Rights Campaign says is that qualified, hardworking Americans are denied job opportunities, fired, or otherwise discriminated against just because they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. So there's no federal law that consistently protects LGBT individuals from employment discrimination. There are no state laws in 29 states that explicitly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. And in 32 states that do have some sort of protection that's based on gender identity. So as a result, you know, gay people face serious discrimination in employment, including being fired, being denied a promotion, and experiencing harassment on the job. As a matter of fact, you can use that as an excuse even against people who are straight. He looked gay, so I fired him. That would be legal.
Really?
That would be totally legal in those states that have no protection for LGBT people. That's how disgusting this particular discrimination is. So ENDA...
I don't think people really get that. I don't think people get that if there is no protection, if there's no legal protection in a state, that means that that's it. You have no recourse. You could try a civil suit and things like that, but you can't go to the government and say, I was discriminated against, because legally you were not.
Yeah, and you can use it as a cover for anything.
Yeah.
If an African-American person comes in, a male or female, oh, he looked gay or she looked like a lesbian, so I didn't hire them. You could use that as a cover for your racism, for anything.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's a huge deal. So,
wouldn't you love for there to be a court case where somebody's up there and is just like, come on, do I look gay?
You know, some really masculine football player type guy.
Exactly. Well,
but there are gay football players.
Yes,
so,
there are.
We can't.
There are. But you know, it would just be interesting. You know, for somebody, not somebody who's homophobic for that, but for somebody else to go, really, I look gay? Please define for me what gay looking is.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. That's another sitcom that we.
That is. That's a whole other sitcom.
But anyway, yeah. So
gay Enda, court.
Gay court. Oh God. Enda. Is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and that's the answer to this. It would provide basic protections against workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. And this bill has been on the Hill for a while now. There was several articles about it September 17th. The Democrats in the House, they tried to file what's called a discharge petition on ENDA. Representative Jared Polis from Colorado and three other Democrats filed this petition to force a House vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And in order for that to work, they would need the backing of 218 lawmakers to force the House to consider the bill. On September 26th, LGBTQ Nation reported that that opportunity unfortunately had stalled and fallen short. Only 190 Democrats signed their name to it. Not only in terms of only a few Democrats, but 190 Democrats out of the amount that they needed, which is 218, signed their names to it. So it basically stopped at that point. But still, that is not that far away. So that's 28 votes in the House short of having ENDA go to a vote in the House. The Senate has already approved similar legislation. So that's how close ENDA is. And so that's one of the reasons I really want to start over the next 6 to 12 months devoting a lot of coverage to it. I'm going to try to see if I can get Polis on the show. We can talk to him, Congressman Polis, and because that's, I think, the next big frontier. Once we have gay marriage legalized and we have ENDA protecting people in the workplace, I think we're going to be in a good place.
I mean, sorry, I know. Sorry, I'm going to sip some tea here.
From the Wilco Cup.
Yes. So I know that there actually are some people that oppose the bill because in its current construction, post Hobby Lobby case, that there is a religious exemption in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
And
so there's some people that that have a problem with the religious exemption in there. Now, there's also Republicans that oppose it for not having a wide enough religious exemption.
Of course.
But, and that would mean that you know, if my religion says that, that you know, I got to kick those queers to the curb, then you can't tell me not to. Which, again, just really weird to me. It's always weird to me if you're going to say that, you know, my God says...
love everyone.
Yeah, my God says, you know, love everyone as you would love me, and yet you would say, yeah, except for those queers. I'm trying not to use the F word out of respect for
the LGBT.
No. Just out of general respect for the population. Just because that word should not get around enough. Faggot. I can't say the F word because I say fuck all the time. But you know, but if from the perspective of that crowd, of that religious crowd, it is. I don't want these fags working with me.
Okay.
And so they and it always just strikes me as weird. Any religion, you know, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, Zoroastrianism, whatever.
Well, I'm actually glad you brought religion up.
Yes.
In terms of the gay marriage case.
Yes.
Because something very interesting happened this last week, too. And it's something else that I've really been looking at closely, and that's the Catholic Church under this new pope.
That totally gay new pope?
Well, I'm not even going to go there. But he does seem, and I've had arguments with a lot of my friends on the left because they say he's not even changing any of the official church dogma. He's trying to put some things in nicer wording. But you know what? This week, past week, AP reported for the first time a Vatican meeting was held to discuss gay and lesbian issues and how to provide better spiritual care to Catholic homosexuals. Bishops spoke of the need to change the church's language about gays from words of moral condemnation and judgment to words of welcome and respect. And Francis DiBernardo, executive director of New Ways Ministry, which is a Catholic rights group, said, "I think what we're seeing is the first crack in the ice that we have been waiting for a very long time. It's a sign of a real first step. Church teaching holds that gay acts are intrinsically disordered, sinful, a serious depravity." And Mr. DiBernardo said, "I know of scores of people who have left the Catholic Church because of those words." So that's a big thing. I think there are a lot of, I want to say first, there are a lot of Catholics in this country who support gay rights, mm-hmm. but I think there are a lot of Catholics who use church teaching also to inform their discrimination, unfortunately. And I think that is going to be a very big deal. You know, Catholics are often swing voters in this country. If the right. Catholic Church goes that way,
right.
there's no holding it back.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we know that as far as, I mean, the Pope carries no sort of official policy weight for any countries or any people. It is what you decide to follow. And often what people follow are, people disobey the Catholic Church all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're a Catholic and you use birth control, you're disobeying the Catholic Church.
And was the statistic something like 97%?
Yeah, most do.
Birth control.
And that's why, for the most part, the Catholic Church has, I mean, except when it's specifically asked, you don't get a lot of talk about birth control. Mm-hmm. You still get the abortion talk, but you don't get a lot of talk about birth control. I think that if the language changes on gay rights, on the existence of the LGBT community, that so many Catholics that do feel like there should be same-sex marriage will to no longer feel that condemnation, to just to be inclined to support LGBT rights, I think that in itself is a huge rhetorical shift that will push things forward.
Yeah.
So go, totally fabulous Pope Francis.
Loving Pope Francis right now. Between his support for social justice and economic equality and you know, gay rights, I think this Pope is going to be a really, really good deal.
You know, if nothing else, he's as a symbol, he's definitely way better than the Nazi.
Yeah, but it's funny how controversial he has been in progressive circles.
Well, I mean, you always have that friend that hates change. Maybe you're somebody that hates change. But you always have that friend that hates change. And you're like, but no, I want to try a new bar. And they're like, no, we want to go to the same bar. Why would we go there? I want to try this new restaurant. Nah, let's just go to that place that we go all the time. And, you know, you start to fucking hate that friend for a while for not wanting to stretch out. So now we've got the friend that, your new friend that's like, hell yeah, let's try that bar. Hell yeah, I want to try that new funky restaurant. Hell yeah, I want to try that new sexual position. Well, I guess that's not really with a friend, depending on what kind of friends you have. However.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. Well, you know what, folks? I think when the Rude One and I are talking about this a year from now, I think we're going to be in a really interesting place. But we've gone way over time with this, but it was an important topic, so I'm glad we did. But we will be right back with a discussion of voter ID laws right after this. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want with Audible. Listeners of Making Sense with Steve Laser can get a free audiobook and 30-day trial membership if they sign up at www.audibletrial.com/lasersense. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. With over 150,000 titles in virtually every genre, you'll find what you're looking for. For instance, Inferno, the latest novel by Dan Brown, is available, as is The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith.
Sign up now at www.audibletrial.com/lasersense.
All right, folks, welcome back to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit. In the last week, the Texas and Wisconsin voter ID laws were struck down. BBC reported two U.S. courts have struck down largely Republican-backed voter ID laws in Texas and Wisconsin just before November's midterm elections. Critics have argued that the laws are illegal poll taxes on the poor, often racial minorities who lean Democratic. The ruling could spare millions of registered voters in both states from being forced to acquire photo ID in order to cast their ballots. Rude one, huge victory for voting rights, really.
Definitely, especially in Wisconsin, where Scott Walker is in a really tight race for governor, and the making it harder for especially minority and elderly voters to vote could have had quite an effect.
You know, I'm really, in a way, getting a little bit tired of fighting this battle because, and the debates about it, when I have them with Republicans, the debates about it, they know very well what this is all about. They don't want blacks and Hispanics to vote and poor people to vote. They know that that helps them. It's obviously helped them in a number of situations in the past. Who buys this? That's what I want to know. Because we've had these investigations. The Bush administration had a five-year investigation into voter fraud.
Yep.
2002 to 2007. Republican administration. And you know how many instances they found? Well, let's put it this way. They opened criminal cases against fewer than 120 people, of whom only 86 were eventually convicted. And a lot of the governors and attorney generals of those states said that most of the people simply made a mistake.
Right. Right.
So that's what we're talking about.
Ann Coulter is more of an active voter fraud criminal than virtually any of those cases.
Well, I don't know if you heard about this. That's one of the ironies of this case. The other irony that just came out in this last week is that Leslie Rutledge, the Republican candidate for attorney general in Arkansas, I don't know if you heard about this story, has been discovered to have been registered to vote in multiple states in addition to Arkansas, and even voted by absentee ballot in Arkansas's general election in November 2008 after she had registered to vote in Washington, D.C. in July of the same year.
Yep.
According to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, she's been removed from the Arkansas voting rolls by the Pulaski County Clerk after he confirmed that she was registered to vote in D.C. and Virginia. So, If Republicans wanted to find examples of voter fraud, they just have to look at their own candidates.
That's right. That's right. I'm always struck by how often real voter fraud, real widespread voter fraud, is actually committed by the officials running the elections. It's not committed by somebody trying to vote. And the officials that end up doing it are often, let's just be honest, Republican. Was there a time when it was Democratic? Sure, there was. You know, if you want to go back to the days of the machine.
Tammany Hall.
Yeah, Tammany Hall. Or even if I'll grant you that some of the Kennedys were, like Joe Kennedy was involved in fishy stuff. Although I don't think that's ever been 100% proven. So instead of investigating the people that they should be investigating, the people that are doing the investigating are often the ones that, if they was voter fraud, they would be the ones doing it. I think, what was it in, what state is it? I just heard that 86,000 people had registered to vote on a voting drive, voter drive, and it was primarily African Americans, a lot of Democratic voters, and they lost 40,000 of the registrations.
Oh my God! So those people are going to show up at the polls thinking they're registered.
And they don't. People don't know that they're registered to vote.
Yeah.
And this was something that I can't remember if it was Virginia or where it was. It was some place where there's a battle going on for the Senate, and so. I mean, the cases of actual voter fraud are so few and far between. I think of the money wasted on it. Here are these assholes that are constantly talking about not wasting money, you know, on everything, anything that people want. You know, let's cut food stamps, but I sound like some crazy ranter, but it's just ludicrous to me that you're going to waste millions and millions of dollars investigating this kind of stuff when it doesn't exist. And that to me is what the Supreme Court was saying. It was like, oh, come on, fucking prove something. You know, nothing's going on. Just stop it.
And besides the Bush investigation that I was talking about earlier, several Republican governors have also done this in their states, also found virtually no instances of voter fraud. Voter fraud isn't the problem. Election fraud. Now, there's the problem where, like you said, officials mm-hmm. just do these massive things to try to sway elections. I did a big story when I was writing for Op-Ed News a couple of years back where I analyzed it. Think about what Republicans are trying to say. Let's imagine that you and I were going to try to do voter fraud for a moment. Now, please nobody follow my instructions. But in a lot of cases, so if you're picking voter fraud, would you do it in a rural area or a urban area? You do it in an urban area. Why? Because in a rural area, everybody knows everybody.
Right.
You can't show up with you know, if you're not from that area or if you're from that area with other names, they're going to be like, hey, Joe, why are you trying to vote as Fred Smith? And the problem with trying to do it in an urban area is there are lines at the polls.
Right.
You can't just, you know, go up there and vote and then come back 15 minutes and vote again. You have to wait in 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour lines. It just doesn't lend itself
right.
to doing it. So voter fraud is a very unwieldy way to try to fix an election. Now, election fraud, now what you're just talking about,
right.
if they lost 40,000 ballots on purpose.
And that was in Georgia. Let me get that right.
Okay. You know, that's a way to fix an election. What Katherine Harris did with the voting purges
yes.
in election
voter
2000,
purges, yeah.
that's a way to fix it. When you're dealing with somebody who is an official and can, you know, get rid of thousands and thousands of voters, that's the kind of thing that you need to worry about. Not this voter fraud. Oh, this person
now that
tried
one person
to,
is going to come up and say, you know, I'm yeah. Steve Laser. I'm going to vote now.
When you look at the mechanics, that just doesn't work.
Right.
It just doesn't work. So, you know, that's absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, when are we going to get past this? And some of the things that I talked about earlier, when Republicans are trying to push certain things to the point where it's going to hurt them, all of these people who have been screwed, who couldn't vote or whatever, you know, Republicans are wondering when they're going to be able to make some inroads into the Latino and African-American community. Everybody who's alive now, you can forget.
Right.
Because you've tried to screw them out of voting.
Right.
And they know it.
Well, and you know, but then the Supreme Court, of course, sent some contradictory messages this week
right.
because there were other cases, two other cases, where they left in place limitations on the time that one can vote. In North Carolina, they reversed an order, and they no longer are going to allow same-day voter registration, and they're no longer going to count out-of-precinct ballots. So if you're in North Carolina and you go to the poll and you're in the wrong precinct and you vote for your representative, they can now just throw out your ballot. Instead of saying, oh, I made a mistake, let me cast a provisional ballot, we'll hold it and count it later, or, you know, more than likely just count it if it's necessary on provisional ballots.
This is so frustrating. This is why back in 2000, those of us who were living in Florida at that time and going through all that, and I was one of them with the whole Gore v. Bush thing, said that we need a good suite of federal election laws. This whole thing where each state can decide, you know, how, you know, what the rights are of each person to vote. And that's one of the things that struck me about the Bush v. Gore decision being based on equal protection. You have a built-in equal protection issue with every presidential election because you have 50 states, each with their own voting laws.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody doesn't have the same rights
right.
sort of right off the top. So we need federal voting laws. We need better oversight of our elections.
Funding of the elections.
And we need funding, yeah.
I mean, huge amount. I mean, you know, there should never be an occasion where somebody has to wait in line for hours and hours to vote. This is not, you know, we're not dipping our fingers in purple ink, okay? We're going to a fucking machine and pushing some buttons. And at worst, we're checking off something on a card. But otherwise, you know, there's another case in Ohio where the Supreme Court is going to allow Ohio to cut back the number of days of early voting from 25 to 28 and eliminate one of two Sundays where there was going to be early voting. So, and why would you eliminate Sundays? Why would you want to eliminate a Sunday?
It's too easy.
Too easy for people to vote. And it's too easy for churches to mobilize their people to go vote. You know, if we really gave a shit truly about voting in this country, it would always be on a weekend. It wouldn't be this nonsense that goes back to colonial times, or, you know, to just when the nation was formed, be on a Tuesday. And, you know, we would give people really the day off, not just the schools where the voting takes place. But everybody's got to squeeze it in. And, you know, it's just this elimination of the public square for things to happen from citizens in this country that many people in power, especially on the right, have eliminated. And so it makes no sense to cut back on the Sundays that you're voting.
You're so right. And there's ticking time bombs all over the place in our election process, you know, and everybody was so into trying to fix that after 2000, and some of these things that you're doing, so, you know, not having the right protections and not allowing people to vote. When you get to an election where you've had a close result, all of these things matter, and then your people are going to once again, when we have another one of these elections, say, "Oh yeah, we need to fix all these things and fix all." The time to fix this stuff is well in advance of an election. Okay, it's too late now for 2014. I hope we don't have any kind of big disputes with this election. But, you know, we need to fix all of these things now. And I remember, do you remember, I don't want to date us, Rudy, but when we were in elementary school.
Yes.
Long before any of these big disputes happened. You remember how they always talked about how wonderful our system is? You know, one person, one vote,
You mean civics class? Civics class, which most kids don't get anymore?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to train them to be active, engaged citizens.
But, you know, it's talked about, you know, the democracy is so important, the right to vote. You know, we have no federal right to vote in this country. There is no federal right to vote in this country. And the way that
we... I'm staring at him like, are you fucking kidding me?
No, I know, but... Now, and the other thing is, the law regarding how we choose our president, besides the whole electoral vote thing, when you look at what it says about those sorts of things in the Constitution, it's in a manner of how each state legislature directs thereof. And that almost caused a huge problem in 2000. If the Supreme Court had allowed the recount to go forward in Florida, the Florida state legislature, which was about 75% Republican, the day of the Supreme Court decision, before the decision was put out, voted to give the state's electors to George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's really been buried in that whole story.
Right.
So if the recount had continued, just have to follow me through this for a second, folks, and the recount showed that Al Gore won.
Which it would have.
A
statewide recount would have showed that.
So what happens in that situation, whenever we have a presidential election, the winners of the of that state's vote for president, those the electoral college voters, however many electoral votes that state gets, for that particular candidate, each candidate has their own slate of electors in each state, go to Washington to vote. So I think it was 27 for Florida back then. Don't hold me to that number. Gore had 27 Florida electors potentially to go. Bush had 27 potentially to go. Gore's would have gone because the state would have certified the election for him in that situation. His 27 folks would have shown up. Bush's would have shown up too because the Florida state legislature would have voted to give his electors. So what happens when there's a dispute about whose electors should be recognized for the vote for that state?
Please tell me, fight to the death?
They're thrown out.
Oh. Really wanted fight to the death.
That would have been more interesting.
Yes.
But they're thrown out, and then you see if somebody has the required electoral votes to win without those electors. And they wouldn't have.
No.
So what does that mean? That means that the election gets thrown into the House of Representatives, president.
Which at that point was Republican.
And the Senate for the vice president, which would have been Lieberman.
Right.
But that's what would have happened. So these are the type of crazy frickin' things that can happen when you don't have the right laws. Allowing the state legislatures, theoretically, the state legislature in New York could theoretically say that I have the right to decide who gets the electors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Theoretically. Obviously, there would be a massive outcry.
No. People would let you.
But
they could.
But theoretically, it's in a manner that the state legislature chooses.
Well, you know, I would love for there to be just popular vote elections instead of the Electoral College. I don't want my elections always to be about going and begging Florida or begging Ohio or
not that there's anything wrong with the people in those states, but
we've both been to those states.
Oh, come on. I love Floridians and Ohioans. The problem is that they have too much power in this whole process.
There's some places in Ohio I like. Yeah. There's some places in Florida I like.
But you know what? I think there would be a lot of surprises through this whole thing, you know, because if it was popular vote, sure. I mean, you know, places like New York and Massachusetts are very blue. But you know what? There are red areas of those states too, and those voters would be counted.
I would just like to live in a place, and I can't remember the last time I lived in a place where presidential candidates actually came and campaigned.
Yeah.
I mean, I always, you know,
when I lived in Florida.
Yeah, I guess so. But you know, living in New York and New Jersey, nobody's coming. They know it's going Democrat. Nobody's wasting their fucking time.
The only time they come is, you know, and I'm saying this about my own party, is when those candidates come to do fundraisers in the wealthy areas of those states. But people like you and me don't see them.
No. I don't have $20,000 for a plate of chicken.
Right.
And
the same thing in the red states. You know, Texas, Louisiana, the wealthy areas of those states, the Republican Party, their candidates go and do fundraisers. Yes. They fly in, fly out.
In fact, the only time I've seen presidential candidates were I saw George Bush Sr. in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And Ronald Reagan I shook hands with Ronald Reagan.
You did?
I did. I shook hands.
With the Gipper.
With the Gipper in 19, would have been 1980 in his first, it wasn't his first campaign, but in his, there I was.
Interesting. You know, this is going to be off topic, but I'm waiting for the proof to finally come out with him that he screwed with the hostage negotiations with Iran. I'm waiting for that. Because, you know, it recently was confirmed that Nixon messed with the Vietnamese peace negotiations.
Wow. History sucks.
History is amazing.
History will always bite you on the ass whenever you do stuff like that.
Yeah. You think you've gotten away with it. But, so... And here's the other interesting thing. Boy, we're getting really off topic.
That's okay.
But folks,
that's
I think
okay.
You're going to love this one. So get this. So Nixon messes with the peace negotiations with Vietnam to get elected, because that would have been a major victory for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Democratic candidate would have probably gotten elected. And then later, Henry Kissinger wins the Nobel Peace Prize for ending a war that the administration he came to power with prolonged to come to power. Don't you love that?
Like I said, history, man. You know, you know, it's sort of, again, you say, I'm going to bring it back to the topic.
All right.
If you say, oh my God, there's been voter fraud before. So you say voter fraud, it sounds scary. It sounds like, holy shit, we got to do something about that. There's voter fraud. But then when you finally start to look at what the truth is, and this is what you're doing with Nixon, what you want to see with Reagan, mm-hmm. when you look at the truth of it, it's all of a sudden, you know, the glow goes off of Reagan. The truth of the voter fraud is, I was just reading one article where somebody that analyzes it said that he found there were 31 credible incidents out of a billion ballots cast. Yeah. In the last, I believe it was the last, I can't remember how many years, but from 2000 to 2014, looking at all elections, general, state, municipal, he found 31 credible incidents out of a billion. You know, there's percentage-wise, there are more fly eggs and rat shit in your canned food than there is voter fraud.
Once again, I'm not feeling hungry anymore. But, you know, Republicans listening to this, here's some government waste for you if you want to get rid of some government waste. All of the salaries of all the Republican officials that are spending their time worrying about non-existent voter fraud, that's some tax money that we could get back there if you want to save some money.
You got to ask yourself, what do you want? Do you want to investigate, one out of every, half a billion people, half a billion votes, that potentially might be somebody who went in and said somebody else's name, or would you like a bridge?
Or in Alaska's case and Sarah Palin's case, a bridge to nowhere.
A bridge to nowhere would at least provide jobs.
That's true. And on that note, once again, we've gone a little bit over the time. The Rude One and I will be back to give an update on Ebola.
Ebola.
Right after this.
Obama. We don't get fooled again.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, B-A-D-L-E-R.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R. Welcome back to Making Sense with Steve Laser and the Rude Pundit. I wanted to talk a little bit about Ebola, how things are going with that. Obviously, you know, not too well, but according to the Associated Press, the death toll just rose to 4,000 with a total of 8,399 cases so far. All but 9 of them were in the 3 worst affected countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. 8 of the rest were in Nigeria, with 1 person dying in the United States. So by the way, what you find out when you research this is that the amount of infections and deaths are accelerating at an almost geometric rate. A lot of these that we're talking about happened in September.
Right. I mean, there's actually talk. I mean, there was a general that gave a press conference at the Defense Department, who said that they predict the possibility that by next summer there could be over 1 million Ebola cases, and they said that then you will not be able to contain it. I'm not easily scared, but mm-hmm. you know, that scares me more than ISIS.
But contained where, though, is the thing, you know?
Right.
In Africa?
Right. In Africa, yeah.
Because, you know, all of the health
Spain.
Experts here... Spain?
Yeah. Well, Spain, where there's now one case at least and 6 potential cases.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
All the experts, though, tell us that in Western countries, because of our living conditions and all those other things, that an epidemic here would be fairly easily contained. I'm wondering, is that, do you buy that? I think I do, but I'm becoming more nervous.
That it could be easily contained?
Yes.
I think that there are places, I think that the Dallas case serves as a warning to all mm-hmm. hospitals of what they need to do. And so I'm glad that so far this has just been one case that was not glad for, obviously, the patient, but glad for having that sort of warning shot. so that we can that everybody can be on alert.
It's really shocking what happened to him. I want to talk about Thomas Duncan as a human being in just a moment.
He's actually he's a way more fascinating person than we've heard. He's not just a guy who bled out of his eyes and nipples and died.
Yeah. And plus, you know,
which, by the way, that happens with Ebola. If you read the hot zone,
the hemorrhagic fevers in general.
Hemorrhagic means you bleed out.
Yeah, there's you know, people don't realize this. There are other hemorrhagic diseases around. One of them that's more common and recurs every couple of years in fairly large numbers: dengue. You know, my mother's from Panama. I've mentioned that a couple of times. There was a huge dengue outbreak last year in Central America. Panama and Costa Rica were particularly hard hit, and a certain percentage of dengue is hemorrhagic, like somewhere between 3% and 5%. Don't hold me to those exact numbers, but it's low. But when you get the hemorrhagic version, you're essentially done.
Well, here's an interesting story, if you'd like an interesting story.
Sure.
There was a there's another disease that's in the same group, filovirus, that causes hemorrhagic fever, that's like Ebola. It's called Marburg.
Yes,
Marburg, and it was Mar. If you
Germany, read, right?
It was named in Germany. Yes, but it comes from Uganda, and specifically, mostly these caves in Uganda. And again, you can go back to Douglas Preston's book, The Hot Zone. Really fascinating stuff from the '90s that freaked us all out back then. Mm-hmm. But in 2007. A woman from Colorado was in Uganda. She comes back January 1st, 2008, when George W. Bush was president.
Mm-hmm.
And she feels sick. And she gets sicker and sicker. She ends up collapsing. Her organs are starting to fail, are hemorrhaging, because that's what a hemorrhagic fever does. She gets treated for she collapses, but she's with family for a couple of weeks. She gets treated with antibiotics and other things, and she finally gets better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do get better from these, but you know, actually Marburg has an 80% mortality rate. But of course, a lot of those people don't even get antibiotics. And so she heard later that somebody else that was in her group that had been a tourist and that had gone to this cave, which she had gone to in Uganda, had died of Marburg. So it stays in your system. If you get a virus, you know,
antibodies forever.
So she goes and gets tested, and it turns out she had Marburg. Highly infectious as Ebola. And she was out among people and was in a hospital without people using particular, you know, kinds of measures. Nobody else got Marburg. Even though there was somebody in Colorado that was walking around with it. So it's sort of could we all calm the fuck down a little bit? It is scary, but unless you go up to somebody and, like, you know, lick their blood or rub their mucus into your open sores, which, by the way, if you have open sores, you probably get that looked at anyway. But unless you do that, you know, or somebody get it in your eyes, you know, unless there is an entryway into your blood system, there's not a lot of ways you can get it.
Mm-hmm. It is so scary, though. You know, and that what happened with Thomas Duncan is really what has to happen in order for this to spread, and that's what sort of worries me to some extent. That our healthcare system, as good as it is, and if it's on alert and following its procedures, can contain this. But is everybody going to do that? You know, I mean, it seems like there's been a wake-up call after what happened to this guy. I mean, coming to the hospital, he filled out the intake form. Now, this is what I understand. I've seen like several different reports that tell the story a different way. So if you've heard something else, feel free to jump in. But he fills out the intake form saying he had been to Liberia. But somehow that didn't get to the doctors that treated him. But he had 103 fever. This is a guy from that area. Had to have had an African accent. Had to, right? 103 fever. They gave him antibiotics and aspirin or Tylenol and sent him home. I just don't understand how that happens.
If you don't think that... Again, this was why I say this was a warning shot. You know, you hear now, I mean, here in New York City, you know, Mayor de Blasio has said flat out, we are ready. And
I think in theory he's right, but yeah. I think we were ready before Thomas Duncan came here. I mean, we have the capabilities.
But what I think we're ready.
Just, everybody has to be thinking that way.
Right.
The thing,
right. Know? I that's think we're ready. About. Ready now.
Okay.
like yes, we had the procedures. Now everybody's on alert, and we'll stay on alert hopefully for a while. I don't know. You know, I think we're all going to die from germs anyway. Like at the end of we're the aliens at the end of War of the Worlds. Where, you know, it's always the germs that bring us down. I just hope there's a zombie apocalypse before that happens, just because that'd be cool.
I mean, I think germs have brought us down several times in our history.
Yeah.
I think that we're made to have a certain percentage of us die in a major epidemic, and then the ones that survive have the immunity and pass that on to their gene. You know, that's evolution, which some people don't believe in, obviously. But, I mean, I think that's why we have the immunity to the diseases that we have. Mm-hmm. That is scary, though, to think that just one disease one day will wipe us out. I think, you know what, if it happens, it's going to be the flu, in my opinion.
It's going to be the flu? Oh, that won't cause zombies. No. I want people running at me with bleeding eyes and ready to try to rip my flesh off. So,
and eat it.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get to gun a few zombies down. You know, then you I will. Then my gun control stance will be totally, totally changed.
Oh God! But you know, I want to.
This is not to reduce, you know, the
Ebola talk.
The Ebola talk.
Yeah. No. And you know what? Getting back to that, I do want to talk about Thomas Duncan for a moment. I was talking with some friends last night about Ebola, and one of the things that they said to me, you know, is, we're also worried about this guy in terms of spreading the disease. Almost nobody is talking about who this person was as a human being. And that really actually got to me. I felt really bad about that. So I want to spend a minute or two just doing that real quickly, because his story is actually, you know, a pretty heartwarming one in a way. You know, he arrived in the U.S. September 20th to reunite with Louise Tro, who is a former romantic partner of his from Liberia, and the son that they conceived 16 years ago, and that he had been separated from. The Times report...
Hadn't seen the son since the son was three.
Since the son was three. So he came here, they were going to reunite reignite their relationship, they were going to get married. Took him a long time to plan. The woman left for the U.S. in 1998, where she's lived ever since. She had gone to Liberia to see him and plan his trip to the United States. I think what people don't understand is, with the immigration laws that we do have in this country, if you want to come here legally, it's a process, and it takes a long time. So people hear 16 years, and they think, well, you know, God, maybe he didn't want to see them or whatever, but who knows what happened with their relationship, but they got together, they decided they wanted to try to make it work. And they made this plan, and they had a wedding plan.
Could I also set the scene? We're talking Liberia in the 1990s, which was a hellhole.
Civil war.
Savage civil war.
Terrible, yeah.
And they met, and you know, as you say, at a refugee camp. So it wasn't a refugee camp for people who were starving or anything like that. It was a refugee camp because you could be hacked to death, tortured. It was horrific. Women being, you know, raped by opposing forces all the time. It was just a nightmare.
Yeah, I forget which African country it was that I read about a couple of weeks ago, but one of the women that they talked to basically said that every woman in the country has been raped multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be Liberia, that could be Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just unimaginable to me. But anyway, this guy was looking forward to reuniting with his son, who attends Angelo State University in San Angelo, Texas. And a lot of focus has been on, did he know that he had Ebola, or did he know he was at risk for it? First of all, he was screened before getting on the plane. Okay. So if he had doubts, he was screened by competent medical people before he got on the plane. But apparently he was infected by this woman. I think most of you have heard this story, but there was a sick pregnant woman in his neighborhood, but nobody knew that she was sick. They've actually talked to some of the other people who have also now come down with Ebola, but she was wandering around, apparently was throwing up, but she was very visibly pregnant. So most of the folks who were helping her, all the folks that they talked to who were helping her, thought, oh, she's nauseous because she's pregnant, which happens, obviously. We all know that, right? So, you know, people are saying that he intentionally flew here knowing he was infected. No, he didn't. Nobody did.
No, it takes days before the infection even shows up.
Right, and nobody thought that this woman had Ebola. It was for several days before people realized that she had it when she was at the hospital. She ended up dying shortly afterward. I'm sorry, not a couple of days. She actually died the next morning. So he didn't know he was exposed. Obviously, he got on a plane and didn't know what had happened to this woman. So all of these people were saying that he should receive all these recriminations if he survived. They were going to sue him. He did all these terrible... The guy didn't do anything wrong.
No.
He just wanted to come here and be with his, you know, his girlfriend and his son, which is, I mean, just such a sad story. His half-brother, Wilfred Smallwood, said that he's a really good man. This was before he passed. He attends church. He tried to save that pregnant woman's life in Monrovia. So I feel really bad. I hope the rest of the media does
right. He wasn't just justice. Some asshole who tricked people.
Yeah.
He was legitimately trying to come in here, and he really believed that he did not have Ebola. You know, it's for me, one thing that's fascinating is I work on Staten Island. In the forgotten borough of New York,
really?
where one of the neighborhoods is Little Liberia, The largest population of Liberians outside of Liberia is on Staten Island, And many, many refugees from the war came there, and many people there still have contact, still go back to see people.
How would you feel about going there, by the way, and hanging out around those people?
Going to Little Liberia?
No.
Little Liberia, I would have no problem.
You wouldn't be worried at all that maybe one of these people just came on a plane?
No.
Really? So I'm worried here.
No,
because
I'm not.
I don't want to tell people exactly where I live.
Right.
But 116th Street, which is not far from me,
yes,
is like a little section of Africa practically here in Harlem, people who have come right. And I do feel, I know it's probably irrational.
You just told people you're in Harlem.
Oh, that I've told people that before.
Okay, all right.
So that I'm not ashamed of. But that's like a little section of Africa here in Harlem.
Yeah, you know what?
Is it irrational? I'm a little bit nervous?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Because, and I'm going to tell you why. The college I work for has a large number of Liberian students.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I am in contact with students from Liberia. Not just young students, people who were born here, but older students too. Mm-hmm. I'm in contact with Liberians constantly. Those people are in constant contact with people that have recently come over from Liberia. In no way, shape, or form do I feel fear, because I am simply not in a position. If somebody was sick and vomited on me, I would be worried about whatever they had. Or if somebody bled on me or something like that. But, you know, I don't at this point intend on having sex with any Liberians.
So you think I should curb my natural tendency to kiss everybody on 116th Street? Is
right. Yes, yes. You shouldn't. If you see Steve coming down 116th Street, look out. Look out. His lips are ready for you. But so I don't have that fear. And I promise you, more than 90% of this country, I am in contact with Liberians than most people who live in Texas.
Now, see, that's very interesting because, you know, there is this fear factor that exists in the United States right now regarding Ebola. And I think 99.9999% of that is irrational. But I do think that if you're in a neighborhood where there are regularly people coming and going from Africa, you know, a melting pot like the United States, I mean, you have three large airports here. People could be coming in and out from all over the place. Even then, it's probably irrational, but I do feel this like weird little fear sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, but I live in New Jersey, and a kid just died of enterovirus D68, which is an evolved, because that's what viruses do, they evolve. If you believe that viruses can go from being something that only animals get to something that people get, you believe in evolution.
There's that nasty word again.
Yes. But
I know where you're going, by the way, and I totally agree, but go ahead.
Right, right. So the enterovirus, that's here.
Yeah.
That's killing people. That's killing people near me. that is actually spread through the air, mm-hmm. as opposed to Ebola, which takes contact. So I'm more worried about that than I am in any way. TB, you want to talk about, we live in, you know, you're living here in New York City. I'm in New York City all the time. There are thousands of people here with TB.
Drug-resistant
TB. Again, infectious through the air. Do you walk around in fear? Do you wear a mask?
And to your point, you know, a significant amount of people in every country of this on the globe die of the flu. I brought it up earlier. Every year. That's
you
a
really
real
fear
thing.
The flu, don't you?
I don't fear the flu. You know okay. why I don't fear the flu? Because
you
I get a
flu
shot,
shot
every year.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I need to get my flu shot.
Funny story about that. We're going to go off on another tangent.
Sure.
I started getting the flu shot every year, the first year I joined the Air Force, because like many other things in the military, it is not optional. You know,
right.
You have to do things. So after my first 2 years in the military, I noticed that every time I got the shot, I got sick. So I went to the doctor. And I said, you know, I think I'm resistant to something. I have a problem with the shot. So he gave me a waiver. The only person on base who did not have to get the shot. So came time the next time to get the shot, presented the waiver. A week later, my commander called me into his office. He said, I noticed that you're the only person in my, you know, group that hasn't gotten the shot. And I said, yes, sir, I have a waiver. He said, oh, you have a waiver. Okay. Dismissed. So I went. And then a few weeks later, and he saw me in the hallway, and he said, oh, Airman Laser, because that's what you're called when you're an airman
yeah.
in the Air Force. Airman Laser, you know, funny thing about that waiver that you have, the base and wing commander mentioned to me every meeting now, every day, that I have the only person on the base who hasn't gotten the shot. And I tell him, you know, Airman Laser has a waiver. And they say, okay. But they bring it up every meeting. I said, they do, sir? He said, yeah, they do, Airman Laser. So guess what? That day, I went and got the shot. True story. And I was fine.
But can I just say, if everybody else around you got the shot,
it was herd immunity.
And you were the only one who didn't.
I know.
How could you have gotten sick unless their shot failed?
You know, you don't understand that, I think, unless you've been in the military
yeah.
and just really, you know. Yeah. It's not that he was trying to intimidate me. It's just, you know, you have this feeling towards all the people that you serve with that you don't want life to suck for them any more than it absolutely has to, because there are aspects of military life that are tough to deal with. And I just was imagining my commander, who was a lieutenant colonel, surrounded by fellow lieutenant colonels who had all had their troops get the shot, and he was reporting to the colonel and the brigadier general and having to tell them that he has the lone troop on base who
wow.
didn't have the shot. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to have him deal with that anymore. So I went and got the shot, and I was fine.
Wow.
But I thought people would find that story funny.
Wow.
So. But I've gotten the flu shot every year since.
You're reminding, you know what? This is a public service announcement. Yeah. Everybody should get their flu shot.
Everybody should.
I'm going to make sure I get mine on Monday now.
I actually have
a
full-time job
oh, okay.
that pays for all of us to get the flu shot who want it every year.
That's nice.
And they schedule it. They actually are anal about it. They
wow.
actually schedule you for a specific time to go get
Where
the appointment.
Where do you get your flu shot? No, just,
I am,
it was an anal joke.
Oh.
Where did you get your
no,
shot?
I don't think I,
no,
no,
you
I
get
think
it in your arm.
Arm.
You get
yeah.
it in the arm.
In
yeah.
the arm. But so I think I'm scheduled for about 7 or 8 days from now. You don't
okay.
have to get it, by the way. It's not
no,
like
no,
the military,
no,
but
no.
they make it free.
I skipped last year.
Did
and
you?
I did not get sick.
I have seen people with the flu. I don't
yeah.
want to get that.
No, I don't want the flu. I don't want the flu. I don't want TB. I don't want Marburg, and I don't want Ebola.
Definitely don't want Ebola.
So, sorry to bring it back to Ebola.
I'm glad you did, because the one other thing that I wanted to make sure that we talked about is that there are some treatments that are offered. You know,
oh, you're going to end on a positive note.
We're going to end on a positive note. The gentleman who died, Mr. Duncan, was actually on one of the therapies. Now, Don't discount that therapy because of that. And I'm going to explain why in a second. But the therapy that he was on was called... And why do they name, by the way, all of these drugs with these ridiculously long, hard-to-pronounce names? The name is called brincidofovir. I'm good at pronouncing names, but this one is brincidofovir. And they're saying that that's showing a lot of promise. There's a doctor in Liberia, and I mentioned this on the show before, who has been treating people successfully with lamivudine. and that is an anti-HIV drug. And he got the idea when he was reading a report that said the structures of the HIV and Ebola viruses have a lot of thing in common, a lot of things in common. So he said, let me just try this. I mean, yeah, when all these people are dying, you might as well.
Ooh, it's Africa. That's right. What it is. It's African DNA. It's African DNA.
But he has reduced the death rate at his clinic to 7% with lamivudine.
And
the only people who have died or who he didn't get to and fast enough. So,
right.
And this is what happened with Duncan and the other drug.
Right.
And that is, if you have something that works, it's got to be in the first 5 days after you start showing symptoms. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. You'll die. And that's what happened with Duncan.
And the mortality rate is, what, about 70%, 80%? Without Ebola,
without one of these,
without the drugs.
Yeah. So
wow, I'm since I know we're gonna come to a conclusion, I'm gonna end on a less positive note.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna end on the way in which crazies have been using Ebola to attack Obama.
Oh yeah.
And we had, for instance, Phyllis Schlafly, who is still alive. And those of us who have been around for a while know that she should not still be alive. The crushing weight of that much evil and hatred should have destroyed her by now.
My mother and women of her era...
Yes.
Just despise her.
Despised her?
More than we do.
Oh, yeah, I bet, you know. Yeah. Phyllis Schlafly, anti-feminist woman who is generally, you know, just blowing right-wingers left and right for, you know, 50 years now.
God.
Yes, that's right. She in fact has stock in ChapStick.
So after your visit today, now I don't want to eat and I don't want to have sex now.
Don't want to have sex? All right, good. I'm here to prevent you from sinning, Steve. So if I could just get rid of that pride, we'd be on our way. Then, so she said that, among others, and she's not the only one to say this, that President Obama is allowing Ebola in the country because he thinks we should be more like Africa, and we should experience some of the things that Africa experiences, because that's how much he hates the United States.
Wow.
Yes. And we have this crazy ass guy that used to be the head of the South Carolina GOP, Todd Kincannon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, who tweeted this week
that he believes that everybody who is diagnosed with Ebola should be executed to try to stop the spread.
And we should napalm the villages in West Africa where there is Ebola, including the healthcare workers that are there, thank them for their service, and then kill them.
Doesn't Monrovia have like a million people?
Yeah, Monrovia has a lot of people.
Yeah. He wants us to basically nuke Monrovia.
So just remember that you're going to hear crazy conspiracy theories, because, you know, it's a short trip. Ebola, Obola, Obama.
Oh, my God. You know, I realize that my fears are probably a little irrational, but what these people are saying and doing.
Oh, yeah.
And you know...
Just remember, the craziest thing you can think of...
It'll happen, and worse.
Somebody else has already thought of it and gone further through the looking glass.
You know, way before this Ebola outbreak started, and we'll end this soon because we're again going over, but when I used to talk to people about what an outbreak of, like, pandemic flu would be like, one of the things that I used to tell them is, you know, the flu is only a small portion of what, you know, the disease in a pandemic like that. There's all of this irrational stuff that comes up. I mean, people in Liberia were attacking health workers. Crap like that happens when you have an outbreak. That's why you have to fully fund the CDC, which Republicans aren't doing. That's why you have to fund all of these.
Approve a surgeon general.
I mean, these aren't things that you mess with. You need to have everything in place. And even when you have all the right things in place, sometimes crazy stuff happens during disasters like these. So, you know, one of these days, the Republicans are really going to do something.
You know, I've been waiting on that for a long time now.
That kills a lot of us.
That's what
they did, you know, I mean...
I would argue,
in Louisiana with the hurricane...
with Katrina?
Holding back all of the funding for improving the levees.
Yeah. Yep.
How many people died from that decision?
Well, I mean, you know, we had over 1,000 just from the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the storm. It was that the levees were not built strong enough. Mm-hmm.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio next Sunday, October 19th. And Monday, October 20th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Be sure to follow The Rude Pundit at rudepundit.blogspot.com and follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.